Bob, today we are going to correct the 10 most common leadership mistakes that we've seen. So first thing we'll do is we'll list them. Second thing we'll do is tell you how to recover from them. And I think we have a good idea why these are so problematic, because we've probably made these mistakes. So don't worry. If you hear some of these things, you go, oh boy, that's me. We're here to help. So we each have five. We have not shared the list with each other. So we are flying completely blind.
There may be overlaps. There may be redundancies. We don't know.
Yeah, we'll find out on the fly. Okay, you or me first. Who wants to go?
After you.
Oh, after me. Oh, after you. Okay, so I believe, and these are not in order. Yours are not in order either.
No.
Correct?
Nope.
So for those of you listening and or watching, these are not in priority order, but we're still going to go through them. So I believe a very common mistake that people make is leaders over-enable teams. And by that, I mean they empower them with everything. And things get off the rails because that team's just not ready. In trying to be that good leader and trying to be the servant leader, leaders step back too much. They take their knowledge and their experience, they put it on the shelf, and they leave the team out on their own and just say like, hey, go get them. You're enabled. Yeah, I did my job. That's not responsible and happens too often. And I've had leaders within my organization that have made that mistake. And the mistake is well-intentioned, but it is a problem I see in a lot of places.
I don't have that one. So excellently played, my friend.
Oh, okay. So, do you have any comments on that, or do we want to talk about how we recover from that?
Why don't we jump in? How do we recover?
Okay. So I think the first thing you have to do is just accept the mistake. Oh, I screwed up, because you know what? The team is going to feel things are too loose, and the team will likely be uncomfortable. They're going to do their best. They're going to be trying their darndest. But when you swing and say like, hey, sorry, I sent you guys off to sea without an oar, and like, that was a mistake on my part. So number one, own it. Number two, step in and be clear. Hey, I'm going to be more present. I'm going to help steer the ship. But ultimately, my goal is to step back, but that's an evolutionary step that we as a team are going to make together. So first things first is likely will be the first step with all of these is just accept the mistake, admit it, and then have that discussion with your team.
See, I'm going to be a little bit more nuanced, Josh. I think there's a continuum. So I think, I think there's a mistake of you can be too in the game with the team. And you can be too, and I actually see these rotations often, not in the middle, but either leaders over-rotate and they give up too much leadership towards the team, and the team doesn't even know that they've done it. They kind of know it, and they're struggling. Or they don't give up any leadership to the team, except go be agile team and do some training and things like that. So I think there's some movement in the middle. I think you have to find your middle ground for the team. Now, I do think a lot of leaders, their inclination is to be a command and control leader. So if you flex too far here, you want to make sure you don't flex too far in the opposite direction when you're trying to recover. So what I would say is find your middle, everyone, and listen to your teams and realize what your tendencies are.
Yeah. Really great point about understanding you as a leader. The approach that we put in place to protect ourselves from this was that we understood the continuum that every team would go through getting to that really high performing team. But anytime that there was a change to the team or somebody started coaching a new team, we assumed everybody started at the very beginning. And so now, depending on the team and their maturity, their experience, all of those factors determine how quickly they moved through that scale towards, okay, they are high performing. Now it's time for us to just like, really the most important thing we can do is get out of the way. But anytime that there was a new coach, a new player, something within the team, we reset it back. And so now it was like, how quickly do we and the team get through to high performing where the most important thing we can do is get out of the way?
Yep.
So we forced ourselves to go through that transition with every team so that we didn't stub our toe and mess things up. That's how we ended up correcting those issues that we were making within our teams. Okay, Bob. your
my number one, well, again, not in priority order. I think leaders make the mistake that they don't understand the role that they have to play in Agile. And it's sort of related to yours in that they think it's a team thing and not a leader thing. So they think the change is outside of themselves, and they don't realize that they unfortunately don't realize that, oh, wow, I have to change too. So I see a lot of leaders that make that mistake. I think then how to correct that. I think self-awareness is a part of it. Maybe have someone who can help you, like a coach or something like that, or even a mentor, another leader who's a mentor, or another leader in your organization who has more experience with Agile. So creating a leadership team, a leadership community of practice with some people who have that experience and they can help coach and model for each other is a really great way, I think, to sort of level set that. What do you think, Josh?
Yeah. I don't know how to, like, that's a really hard one to even self-discover.
Yeah.
That's where I know you and I, whenever we come in and we start coaching an organization, we start there. We start with the leaders and help them understand the roles that they have and help them really feel the gravity of the importance to the transformation that they play. And we hit that up front because you and I both have lived through times when that leader is not on board, and try as we might, it doesn't matter. So this is a huge one, yes, but also a very difficult one to self-diagnose.
Yeah, I don't think,
which is why I think you Bob's plan of, you have to have those peers to help you to peers really understand,
or coaches
that.
Yeah. Or an outsider can really help. It is really hard. Even in the first one, in Josh's, like trying to get the balance and not over rotate a coach or a mentor in-house or outside of house can really help with that. It's seeing in the,
agreed,
you know, sort of another set of eyes can help, because it's hard to see where you're at.
And hopefully this podcast is doing it for somebody. Hopefully you're hearing these things. And as we go through each of our five, so 10 in total, hopefully you hear one or two, not that we hope you're doing things wrong, but we hope we can help you. That's what we're trying to do. So do take stock with each one of these and listen and evaluate yourself. Am I nailing this one, or can I get a little bit better? Because some of these, it's not going to be a yes or no. It's going to be, well, I'm doing, you know, 95%, which is good enough. Or gosh, I'd say I'm only like 60% hitting that. So I got to level my game up.
Hey, Josh, that's can you get to number duh?
Oh, see, you had to go there.
I did.
You had to do that. Technically, this is number three we'll go with.
All right.
Yeah. I'm back. The number three item that I believe leaders make is not having a clear culture / core values. So they have expectations of a team or of team members that the team members have no idea that those expectations are placed upon them. You see this a lot come review time. So if you are doing reviews and you're struggling to figure out feedback you're going to give, or you give feedback in that process and your team members feel surprised or taken aback, or they just feel like, oh boy, if I knew about that, I probably would have done better at it, then you're not doing a good enough job providing them with a clear culture and the core values that go along with this. And I'm not sure you can overdo the clarity on these things. I really don't. To me, I try and talk about them as much as possible, as often as possible, and as consistently as possible, so that it is crystal clear that we know who we are and who we want to be and how we're going to work with each other. To me, that's what all these things help shape, that helps create the culture. Feels redundant for me to say that, but that's how you create the culture of an organization where people know what to expect from each other and they can help each other get better in those areas. Because guess what? Everybody's on the same page. Everybody clearly knows what great looks like, but there are nowhere near enough leaders that do this well. And I don't believe you can overdo this one. I think this is one that you just beat into the ground.
So it was my number five was trust and safety, and I put culture shaping. And so I think it aligns with what you were saying, Josh. So I'm going to combine those two and just sort of say yes and. Okay. I think leaders are culture shapers. And agile leaders, so the mistake you can make is be an anti-agile culture shaper as a traditional leader. And the shift is to become a pro-agile culture shaper. And things that come into play there are trusting, from my point of view, is establishing a culture of trust. Extending trust to your team is one aspect of that. A vision and mission are, as Josh was talking about, part of that. Expectation setting is an incredibly important part of that. I think extending psychological safety so that there's safety in the organization is a part of that. And when I say a culture shaper, and I think we've had Metacast recordings that talked about this, it's the micro shaping. It's the words you use. It's the small conversations. It's not culture shaping with a big Goomis PowerPoint or a big Goomis, you know, speech. It's your one-on-one interactions. How do you applaud someone's effort? How do you handle when a failure occurs or when a success occurs? How do you handle it when a team fails or when an individual in a team fails and the team succeeded? How do you react to things? You're shaping the culture. So I think the corrective action is to think about, again, get a coach or do some reading about agile leadership, but, you know, sort of lean into those agile leadership mindset and shape the culture every day.
Yes. If you aren't doing something about it, or if you don't feel like you're positively affecting the culture every day, you're not doing enough with your culture, and your culture will get squirrely and it will end up different than you would hope it would be. And then that's when things get difficult to try and reel things in and get them going in a different direction. So just right out of the gate, do it right, do it light. That's the old saying that I was raised up on. So just do it every day, a little bit, and it's going to pay off.
Next one, Josh. No.
Next one.
Do you want me to?
Since you took your fifth and tacked it on to mine. Okay.
You go for it.
I understand. I can go. All right. The next item on my list is settling on a hire.
Ooh.
Yeah. That is something where, gosh, we just got to get somebody in. If we don't, ooh, man, they're good, but they don't have everything. Let's just go ahead and hire them. I have seldom seen that course of action pay off in the long run. It is very consistent that a problem is created for both parties where it's just not a good fit, and no one is happy when that happens. So do not settle on a hire just to get a butt in a seat or to get somebody on a team, because that will not go well. Now, this piggybacks on, if you have clarity on what your culture is, what your core value is, then it's much easier to end up not choosing to settle because you have that clarity. If you've not done a good enough job with your core values and your culture, then you get in these squishy situations where you end up settling on someone. And you might not feel like you're settling, but you choose to go with somebody, but you don't have anything to measure them up against. So you just kind of go with them. And then, unfortunately, things go sideways.
So I think the corrective action is don't do that, right? Is take your time, understand your mission. I'd add to it too, Josh, is engage your team. From the point of view of, you know, don't just listen to yourself, listen to your team. In fact, if anything, you know, the team should be, your team should be the primary voice in your hiring decisions, and listen to them and trust them and expose them to that. But absolutely.
Yeah. One of the tricks that we used was, if it's not a hell yes, then it's got to be a hell no. So we have to all be fired up to get this person on our team. And if you don't have that feeling, if everybody's not like knocking down your door physically or virtually to get this person hired and on board, then don't hire them. Be patient. Find that person because they are there. So it's got to be a hell yes before you pull that trigger. Otherwise, don't do it. You're going to regret it.
I love that.
Okay, Robert.
No, I love that. I love that view. I mean, think about it from an employee, like the person you're bringing on. They want it to be a hell yes. They should, or they should want it to be a hell yes. I mean, they should want you to be excited about them. Imagine, you know, you're bringing someone on a football team, a new quarterback. Oh, you know, you were like our third pick. Maybe, you know, it's like, come on. What?
Yeah.
Like what? So it's got to be mutual. You got to be you're super excited. All right. My next one is leaders try to plan things and then they do deadlines. I get clients quite often that they want to engage me and it's like, and Bob, we need to have this agile thing in place and done by June 1st because then there's something else going on in the Gantt chart. And it's not that way. And I don't think you plan. I think the entire, it's not just the agile transformations or going agile. I think it's this notion of deadlines, this notion of finishing something by this date. Leaders, you need to let go of that. And that doesn't mean we don't deliver value. That doesn't mean we can't delight customers. It doesn't mean we can't hit dates. It just means this notion, like phenomenal things. We're going to deliver like an Apple Watch. I guarantee you Apple slipped it. So if innovation was happening, and it was, I guarantee you that they slipped dates to hold to creativity and innovation and engineering. And I guarantee you they slipped dates. So the point is, depending on what you're trying to do, if you're looking for innovation, if you're looking for kick-ass products, if you're whatever you're looking for, just let go of that fixed date mentality, particularly with an agile. You're never done. I hate to break the news to you. You're never done with an agile transformation. And I know that sounds trite or odd, but it's true. So,
yeah, I spend a lot of time, especially recently, just coaching people on our target is reality. Let's not talk about best case scenario, worst case scenario. What do we really feel is possible with what we're trying to build, develop, create, deploy? And let's just constantly talk about what that reality is. And getting people to relax enough to have that conversation about what is real, what is realistic, is amazingly difficult. And so much of it is driven by how the leader approaches a conversation. You can set the tone for everything with how you approach the conversation about this project and what you prioritize, what you care about. And yes, we need, just as Bob said, we have to deliver things to be able to generate the revenue, to pay the salaries for everybody to do the thing. But when you enable your organization with all of that information about, hey, we expect this to generate this amount of revenue, here's what it unlocks for our company, right, here's how you can make that a reality, here's how we're going to differentiate ourselves, here's the things that separate us that will convince our customers to part way with their own money on a regular basis for the things that we're building and shipping. When you enable teams with that knowledge, then it happens, as opposed to trying to control it and reducing the amount of information that flows freely within your organization. That's when you get into trouble.
Cool. What do you got, Josh? Absolutely.
It adjacent/ piggybacks on some of the things that we're talking about is it's inconsistent communication.
Ooh, okay.
And just just simple things of having one-on-ones scheduled regularly and making them and being there, having a regular departmental meeting or leadership meeting or whatever it is, having an actual like quarterly all hands and not delaying it, not canceling it, not doing all just the number of times where I see leaders just royally screw themselves and the organization because they're not ready. So the right answer is, oh, well, let's just delay it. And then it gets delayed. And then by the time you delay it again, it's time for the next one. And so now you have this backlog of things that you haven't talked about. So it is just get out there, be the communicator on a regular basis, build that cadence and stick to it. Even if it's a short update, small update, just get in that rhythm. Otherwise, what happens, and you know, evolution has kind of taught us to do this, that when there's information that we're missing, it gets scary, and it's safest for us to assume the worst, because then we can do the things to protect ourselves. Whereas if you assume the positive, if you're walking in the woods and you hear a sound, you don't know what it is, you don't walk towards it, because it could be a bear, it could be a mountain lion, it could be who knows what. So the same thing happens when teams don't have clear, consistent communication and context, then fear starts to creep in their heads, and that doesn't help anybody. So just, if you have that team meeting and you're not ready, I don't care. Be ready, get ready. That's your job. Find a way to make it happen. Do not cancel it. Don't delay it. None of that is allowed.
I mean, I love this. I was going to say that's your job, and you stole my line a little bit.
I'm sorry.
No, I mean, I love the boldness. The one thing I'll say, Metacasters, on corrective action is it's not just communicating, it's listening. So I'm coupling these two things together. Mm. Not only do you have to be a good communicator outward, but you have to be a good communicator inward and listen. Listen to your team. Ask questions. So part of communication is asking questions and then listening to what people are telling you. Get your radar up. Listen to your team. Don't get defensive. Don't push back. Oh, the HR department won't let me do that. No. That's not. No. You listen. And then respond. So communicate and then also listening. I would couple to that. And they go hand in hand. But it is your job. It is your job. Just amplifying, doubling down on what Mr. Anderson said.
All right. We're about halfway through our list. Going to take a break. And you've heard us say a couple times, get some help. Find somebody that's been there and done that. Well, that person, you're looking at them. You're listening to them. Reach out to me, website, kazi.io, and we'll get you fixed up. These are common problems. I've made a ton of these mistakes. So trust me, if you're listening to this and you're hearing some of those things and saying, man, that's me, that's us. I got to find a way out of this. Give me a call. Hit me up. We'll figure it out. We'll get you back going in the right direction. All right, back to the episode.
For me, I see a lot of leaders, they try to buy Agile. And what I mean, as I was thinking about this, I thought there was a client that invited me in. I didn't engage with them, but they invited me in years ago, maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, whatever it was. And they had a consulting firm that came in, and they gave them like a 232 PowerPoint slide strategy. So they paid them $1 million or whatever, like a big five consulting firm. And it's like, here's $1 million. Tell me how to be agile. And they got these 230 slides, and they were incredibly dense. I mean, and I'm not exaggerating. I think I might still have a copy of this. They were incredibly dense. And it was like, and then they gave it to us because they couldn't afford the big five consulting firm. So there was like, so they were trying to shop it around to someone and say, well, here's the details. All we need is execution. What we have here is a failure to execute. Can you do this for us? And so what I would say is, the corrective action is, don't do that. I would actually say grow your own strategy. Maybe get some consulting help, coaching help. That's fine, but don't try to buy it. I would put SAFe in this umbrella. Don't try not to buy a scaling. I mean, it's just not the right solution. Do a little bit more heavy lifting, do a little bit more internal work in understanding what you need to build, and then build it home, grow it, maybe using some patterns from other things. But this mindset that I'm just going to buy Agile and install it is the wrong mindset. And I can't tell you how many leaders have that mindset.
Yeah, you know, a time when I was handed this 4x6 poster of SAFe.
I'll never forget that damn poster.
Yeah. Here, Josh, this is your job. Make this happen. And it was immediately like, whoop, that's going in the trash. No, that's not who we are. That's not who we need to be. But that was the hope. That was the intent of, oh, okay. We now have the paint by numbers version. Let's just go, put purple in wherever it says 6 and you go do that. If you do that, you will fail.
Yeah.
I trust Bob and I on this. If you go down that path, not only will you fail, but you will fail in a very expensive manner. And your recovery will be even more expensive. So if you choose to go down that path, have deep pockets, and you're going to probably need to have your resume ready because it's going to fail and you probably won't get the chance to recover it.
Man, you and I are in sync today. I was thinking you're going to get fired is the yeah. penalty. Nine times out of 10, it's not just a failure. You've just wasted a lot of time and a lot of money, and you basically have pissed off an entire organization. And no, you need to go, and you will be canned. Absolutely. Get your resume ready.
Yes. All right. My final item, which is, I realize now that I'm saying it, it's the opposite of the first item that I've provided. It is, and Bob, you can bring in the cool hand Luke, a failure to delegate. So just, I am going to control everything. And yes, I know I should delegate. Yes, I have people that are competent for me to delegate to, but I am scared. I don't trust that if I let go of this, things are going to happen. And I understand. I accept it's scary when you take your hands off the wheel. I have teenagers, so I understand having to move over to the passenger side and sit in the car with a 15-year-old behind the wheel and knowing all the things that could go wrong. That's scary, but there's no other way for it to happen. So if you want to enable that growth, if you want to enable the success that empowerment creates, you have to get over that and you have to delegate. Otherwise, you become that single point of failure and it's a bottleneck and you end up working yourself to the bone. And I made this mistake early in my career and it crushed me. I was one tired dude because everything had to go through me and our capability to deliver was slow because everything had to go through me, but I felt good. It made me feel good in that moment, but over time it just, just crushed me into the ground and my team. It wasn't an enjoyable place to work.
I think I keep going back to that situational thing, Josh, of getting in the middle. Like, yeah. I think in some cases a leader will be too far left, too far in controlling. And then sometimes they'll flex and say, oh, the teams are mature. So then they'll flex. But then the teams really do need help depending on the product. So there's this situationalness, this awareness, situational leadership, agile situational leadership, where you have this agile mindset. And you're meeting the teams where they need you to be. And it's very different. And one team may require one thing and another org or team may require something else. And you have to be flexible. So you have to be fluid. You can't be. So being fixed either in one direction or the other is going to fail for you. You have to have that fluidity, that nimbleness.
Yeah. And that takes a ton of effort and energy to just stay in tune enough to be able to feel those moments of when you need to push in or when you need to back out. It is not, Bob and I were joking about another topic about just being on the golf course. You can't be on the golf course. You have to be present. You have to be there. You have to be sensing all of the challenges and successes to be able to understand where and how you need to play your role.
Yep. Yeah, man, this is a firm Josh today. You're a little bit, you're firing people. You're, man, who is this? You're a little feisty today.
Oh, I guess, friend. Whenever we record on a Saturday evening, you get a different Josh. Than
yeah,
on a
we need
morning.
To do this more. We need to do this more often. All right. My final one is too much change fatigue. A lot of leaders bite off change. And they underestimate like what is change. Like I joke about this, but it's not a joke. Like the organization change of the month club, like musical chairs, so many. And I used to think it was a thing. And I thought, oh, companies are not doing reorgs all the time to fix everything. They're still doing reorgs all the time, like a reorg this. And then, oh, I don't like the results, and reorg this. Oh, we bring in some, we'll flip leaders around. We'll have Josh do product, and then we'll have Bob do product, and Josh will do tech. And then Bob will do project management with fixed Gantt charts. And that's just organizational change. Then there's like mergers and acquisitions. There's like technology stack change. There's like agile. We're introducing agile. Oh, we don't want Scrum now. We want Kanban. Oh, we bring in Save. Too much change. So I think as leaders, the mistake is too much change and it never ends. And the organization gets change fatigue. And folks start rolling their eyes and you start burning them out. Whether they tell you that or not, you're burning them out. So I think the counterpoint or the repair is metered change relative, bite off sizable chunks of change and bite them off that are meaningful, high priority. Ask your teams, engage your teams in those decisions, bite them off, let them land. And while you're doing that, don't introduce 28,000 other changes and then bite off another set of chunks. If you can have the discipline to do that. But too much change is going on. And the banner usually is with leaders. Oh, but I thought Agile. Oh, but Josh, I thought Agile could handle change. Are you telling me it can't handle? Yeah, it can handle change, but not freaking utter chaos, right?
Yes.
There's nothing that can handle utter chaos.
Yes, the we're agile, so we can handle this excuse that leaders use too often. That is a telltale sign. So if you use that as an excuse to be able to make sweeping changes across your organization, that's a telltale sign that this is a problem. And I view this as directly tied to my number two item, which was not having a clear culture, not having that clear strategy, that understanding of who we are and who we want to be. And understanding that we're all on board with what the destination is. We have an idea how we're going to get there. And we're going to take these steps. And yes, we're going to be agile. And we're going to tweak along the way. But we know who we are and who we want to be. And we have those broad strokes. We know those broad strokes are going to be mostly right. But we'll have to tweak them. So along the way, we'll make the little adjustments that are required. But we don't want to go crazy and do a 180 three or four times. Because you just end up doing a 180 going backwards. But this is, again, another one of those situations where this is because companies don't know who they are and who they want to be, and they likely wanted to just buy an answer. So hey, let's buy an answer. Ooh, that answer is kind of hard. I don't like it. Let me go get another one. Let me go buy another one. Let me go get another one. Let me go get another leader who has a different idea. Let me go do that. And so then you never go anywhere. You keep going in circles, but you never actually go anywhere. Those organizations that I always tell them, like, you're in the pool, you're flapping your arms around, you're making a lot of splashes, but you're not going anywhere.
Exactly.
You need to coordinate these things and get your arms and legs going in the same direction, actually start moving down the pool, because you're flailing, you're doing a lot of stuff, but you're not going anywhere.
Well, unless you're playing Wheel of Fortune, and then you can like buy a vowel to maybe fill in the puzzle. I don't know where that came from, Metacaster.
I was going to ask where that came from.
I don't know.
But if you don't know,
I don't know. Okay. Wheel of Fortune in the pool. No, I don't know. Hey, Josh, I think we nailed it. Can we declare victory on this?
Absolutely.
All right. Hey, Metacasters, I really digest our keys. I don't know. We were targeting 10. We may have had around 8 because we combined some, but it's some meaningful failure and then success mitigations. So hopefully you got some value out of it. From beautiful downtown, late afternoon on a Saturday evening, Cary, North Carolina.
And from beautiful downtown Fuquay Arena, North Carolina.
I'm Bob Galen.
And I'm Josh Anderson.
Shake
and bake.
Take care, y'all. Good one, Josh. I think we knit. It felt good. It felt juicy. Yeah. I felt the juice flowing.
Oh my gosh. I don't know how to respond to that.
I know. I know. You can't.